A man walks into a nightclub with a beautiful girl on his arm. The show begins, and the comedian comes out for his first show of the evening. The comedian says, "A man walks into a nightclub with a beautiful girl on his arm." The show begins, and the comedian comes out for his second show of the evening. The show begins, and the comedian says, "A man walks into a nightclub with a beautiful girl on his arm." Just then, a man in the front row stands up and says, "I think I've heard this before." The comedian says, "Maybe you caught my first show of the evening." The man says, "No, I just walked in here." The comedian says, "Well, it was a guy who looked just like you. Walked in with a beautiful girl on his arm. Could have been your twin brother." The man says, "My twin brother is dead." The comedian says, "What is this, a wake?" The man says, "I don't have to stand for this." And he stands up and he walks outside. The comedian says, "Are you out there? I can hear you breathing." The man says, "I'm holding my breath." The comedian says, "Well, I'm holding your wife." Just then the man says, "That's not my wife," and he walks back into the nightclub with another beautiful girl on his arm. "Who's that lady I'm seeing you with?" the comedian says. The man says, "This is my wife. That other lady is my dead twin brother's wife. You can take her if you want her," and the comedian says, "Not unless you say please." Just then, a man walks into a nightclub with a tattoo of a beautiful girl on his arm eating elbow macaroni. The comedian says, "Is that girl from Italy?" The man says, "No, just hungry." Just then, a man walks into the nightclub. He comes riding into the nightclub on a pony with a feather stuck in his head. "What do you call that?" the comedian asks. "An entrance," the man says. "But forget that. Just give me a beer and give my pony a jockey." The bartender says, "I think that pony's had enough already." "Well, make it a short jockey," the man says. "And while you're at it, give that lady's lawyer some briefs." The lady stands up and says, "I can defend myself, Your Honor." And the lawyer says, "But I'll defend her honor, Your Honor." The judge says, "Well, honor offer. Make up your mind." The comic says, "Definitely honor. That's the best offer I've had all day." "Well, take it or leave it," says the judge. "Couldn't we just drop it?" says the comedian. He says, "Well, you better drop leafless before you bomb." Well, the comedian says, "I'm already bombing." He says, "Maybe it's your material." He says, "You don't think it fits?" He says, "Well, it could be let out a little." The comedian says, "How much do you think it'll cost me?" He says, "It'll cost you an arm and a leg." The comic says, "Well, listen, can you put it on the cuff?" The tailor says, "I'll tell you what I'll do. Well, forget the leg and I'll just charge an arm." And a beautiful arm it is. "Okay," says the comedian. The tailor cuts off the comedian's arm and gives him the suit. The tailor calls his girlfriend and asks her to go out on the town with him in order to celebrate. He calls on his girlfriend and gives her the beautiful arm as a gift. She wears it around her neck just like a stole, and they go out on the town. The man walks into the nightclub with a beautiful arm on his girl. The show begins, and the one-armed comedian comes out for his last show of the evening. He does his act, and the audience stands up and gives him a hand.
Jarrow, New Year's Eve, 1911.
Trouble at mill.
Oh, no. What kind of trouble?
I don't know. Mr. Wentworth told me to come and say there was trouble at the mill, that's all. I didn't expect a kind of Spanish Inquisition.
No one expects a Spanish Inquisition. Our weapon is supplies. Supplies and fear. Fear and supplies are two weapons. Our fear and supplies and ruthless efficiency are three weapons. Our fear and supplies and ruthless efficiency and an almost fanatical devotion to the Pope. Amongst our weapons, our fear, supplies, ruth... Amongst our weaponry are such elements as... A fear... I'll come in again.
I didn't expect a kind of Spanish Inquisition.
Who said that?
What?
Don't play games with me! Our weapons are fear, surprise, ruthless efficiency, and an almost fanatical... Ooh! Ah! Cardinal Biggles!
Here, Lord.
There's only one thing to do. We must torture him and obtain a signed... Two things to do. One, torture. Two, obtain a signed confession. Three, nothing. There is no third thing. Is that clear? Biggles.
Yes, Lord.
We are to extricate the truth from this unbeliever on pain of torture. Fetch me the soft cushions. Now, infidel, confess.
I don't know what you're talking about.
All right. Cardinal Biggles, poke him with the soft cushions. Confess! Confess! Confess!
It doesn't seem to be hurting him, Lord.
Have you got all the stuffing up one end?
Yes, Lord.
Ah! He must be made of stronger stuff. Get the comfy chair!
Comfy chair. While they're all saying the comfy chair, here's question one of our special sound quiz. Question one. What famous person is this getting up in the morning?
Have you heard anything recent of the squatter?
No,
I wouldn't think you would have heard anything of the squatter.
What's he up to at the moment?
Squatter Madras? Well, he tends to lie a bit low, you know.
Really? Why's that?
Well, he that's the way he lies. A bit low, which is the best way to lie, I think, in my view. The squatter was one of my very best friends, which is him and him. He is, in fact, my only best friend.
Mm-hmm.
The squatter had this incredible quality, which was, I don't know how you can define it, but I would say it was, I'd say stupidity.
Yes.
Which very few people I've known have got to quite the same extent that squatter has.
Yes.
I don't know if I've ever told you the story about squatter and the ant.
No.
Have I told you about squatter and the ant?
No.
The squatter was in a terrible position.
Yeah.
He's in Bahrain, which is a pretty bloody place to be.
Yeah.
And there was this ant.
Yes.
Which had only one leg.
God.
And only one eye.
God.
And it was about 2 miles away from squatter.
God.
So, pretty bloody menacing position for squatter.
Yeah.
Who was equipped only with, a hydrogen bomb.
God.
Six grenades. God. And, a few rifles.
Yeah.
And this bloody ant, one eye, one leg, was advancing towards squatter at about, I'd say, about a mile every century, you know.
God.
Really speeding up.
Right?
I think the animal was on drugs.
Yes, or heat.
Or heat, yes, as you may say.
Mm.
And squatter, with his extraordinary calm, took it very smoothly.
Yeah.
And do you know what he did?
No.
Nothing.
Good God.
He immediately did nothing.
Yeah.
And this stupefied the ant.
Yeah.
Stopped in its tracks.
Yeah.
It didn't move an inch for about 3.5 years.
Yeah.
But still, squatter was very much aware of the problem of the ant with all of one leg and all of one eye advancing towards him. So he took up, strategic positions, about 5,000 men on one side and 7,000 men on the other side, all equipped with various kinds of guns and so on. The ant was fairly pinpointed. But what was odd...
Yes, go on.
I will. Was the ant understood squatter. The ant realized he was up against somebody as good as he was.
There's some sort of understanding between... They knew they were...
Equals. In a struggle, yes.
Yeah.
So squatter, with a tremendous display of courage, put up his hands and surrendered.
Yeah.
And the ant, 5 years later...
5 years later?
Yes, 5 years later, crept into the hole, and squatter was gone.
Mm.
And this is the extraordinary thing about squatter.
Mm-hmm.
He was never there when he was wanted.
No.
And squatter told me later that he had gone because he'd had to go.
I think that's...
That sums up squatter for me.
Yes, it's a sort of a very simple approach to life.
At the end, these days, is writing his memoirs, the Sunday Telegraph. But Squatter
refuses to
comment. He refuses to comment on the whole situation. He just won't. I think he's not right.
I think he retains his dignity.
Well, he retains everything.
What I think is the tragedy about Squatter is that you know that one of these days...
Yes, one of these
days. One of these days, he's going to let fly... But the most enormous fart.
Well, this is a tragedy about squatter. I mean, one has tried to hush it up. One has attempted to put cushions up his arse. One has attempted to do many things. But squatter, taken unaware, may give fly to the most enormous fart. and this will be his undoing.
Well, I just wish him luck.
But more I wish him that, luck. At the same time, I wish him a strange sort of happiness.
Mm.
Death.
Yes, I think it's that would be the best thing for Squatter.
I think if death could come to Squatter now,
rather than the other way round.
Yes.
I think we'd all be very happy.
I think so.
Hey there, cousin. You say 5 sponsors dropped out when they discovered you tried to squeeze in a record Monday morning? And your wife wants you to take her mother along to the disc jockey convention in Las Vegas? And your microphone's all rusty? And your 45 commercials are spinning at 78? And the engineer just put on a big symphony and won't turn it off because he says he likes good music? And you just interviewed a lady singer and she said a lot of dirty words over the airwaves and the mayor's trying to contact you. Is that what's bothering you, cousin?
Well, lift your head up high and take a walk in the sun with an intestitude and fortitude and you sort of wild to get off. You'll never give up, never give up, never give up. That ship.
Say there, Bunky. You say you're spinning the hits of the week and the owner of the station calls up and wants to hear Liebestraum? And you just discovered you've been given the wrong times all morning and all your listeners are late for work? And a lot of them got fired and they're suing you? And someone brought up a container of coffee with a live turtle in it? And it fell all over your brand new copy. And the turntables got stuck and it's Sunday and you gotta keep ad-libbing till the man comes back from the beach to fix them. And your pants are all soaked from that coffee and someone sticks last year's headlines under your nose and you're reading them. And the head of your fan club, a big, heavy-set girl, was just arrested for attacking an old man in a hotel lobby. Is that what's on your mind, Bunky?
Well, if you're head up higher, take a walk in the sun with that magnitude and fortitude that you've shot a while. You've shot a while to get off. You'll never give up, never give up, never give up. That ship.
Well, this is the old philosopher saying, man the lifeboats, women and A&R men first.
Okay, hello to you, and good afternoon, good evening, good morning, whatever, wherever, whoever, and why. That's what we all want to know. But I digress. I'm KBC, I'm your host today, another edition of the Bit Slap. And today I thought I would get out my funny shirts and silly shoes and get back to some good old comedy. Kind of spoken word, theatrical type comedy. No stand-ups. Well, that's not true. The first thing was called stand-up, and that was the National Lampoon Radio Hour. They were, of course, the forerunners of Saturday Night Live way back in the 70s. You remember the 70s? And that came from a box set called something like Buy This Now or We're Gonna Kill This Dog. And I'm here to tell you that they did not kill the dog. The dog died of natural causes. At least that's what they told me. After that, Monty Python, the Spanish Inquisition. And I know you weren't expecting that because, of course, everybody knows no one expects the Spanish Inquisition. That came from one of their earlier albums. After that, from our friends Derek and Clive, otherwise known as Dudley Moore and Peter Cook. And that was Squatter and the Ant, part of their Heroes series, featuring great men of the British Armed Forces. And that was the tale of Squatter and his harrowing experience with the Ant. After that, the DJ's Philosopher from Eddie Lawrence. There's a sequel to that. We'll hear that in a second. Eddie, of course, was the host of the Three Stooges shows here in New York before Officer Joe Bolton. And I remember hurrying home from school every day so I could watch the Three Stooges poke each other in the eyes like idiots. Years of therapy later, I'm here to tell you, it's all fake. So, all right, let's get back to what we're doing here. We have some stuff is funny, some stuff is funnier. This was inspired by when I was putting together my German show a couple of weeks ago. One of the routines I heard, one of the things I heard was a comedy routine. Made absolutely no sense, of course, because it was in German. But it got me to thinking that there's more to life than just playing music, isn't there? So, coming up, Eddie Lawrence, and then we'll take it from there. Please enjoy. Don't be afraid to laugh out loud, even if you're listening on your iPod in the subway.
Hiya, jocks. You see, MC'd one of them 24-hour telethons and took in $7, pledges and all. And you got 1,000 requests for a record by Lily Pons, so you play it and get a rep as the first sick DJ. And that delicatessen which used to send up all those free sandwiches starts charging you for them. Save your money. And you just had a coughing attack in the middle of a cough drop commercial, and they just banned your theme. Is that what's for real today, Booby?
Well, lift your head up high and belt out that station break with a vengeance. You show those song pluggers. You show the wild. You'll never give up, never give up, never give up. Those tapes.
I hope not. Hey there, Bleary. You say your wife decides to sit with you on that all-night show. She says she heard a lot of voices. And since you said Paul Anka's getting old, a heavy-set girl on a motorcycle seems to be stalking you. And you just interviewed a guy with blisters all over his mouth, and you both used the same mic. And a station manager keeps telling you you'd be great on TV. The trouble is he keeps saying it all the time now. And you just bit your tongue trying to talk like a hipster. Is that what's taking the zing out of your pitch today, Pagliacci?
Well, lift that needle on high and get your lunch off the turntable. Gargle before each commercial. Don't fool around on the bandstand. Your day will come. I can see it all now. The top 10 hits in a week. In fourth place, Beethoven's Fifth.
Hey there, boo-boo. You say you got a lot of mash notes from someone named Billy, and you find out it's a man. And your engineer cuts you off the air, locks the control room door, and takes over. Little prank by a sweet, cocky kid. And a guy gives you a free record and pulls out a badge. And your health food sponsor just found out you're 5 foot tall and weigh 246 pounds. And on your first live discussion panel, everybody gets drunk and a fist fight breaks out with a lot of dirty words. You're lucky nobody was listening. And another 1,000 postcards just come in for that Lily Pons record. Is that what's got you spinning at 78 today, busker?
Well, play that music out loud. Keep those splippos out of the studio. Fight, fight, fight. While you're at it, get a new sign-off. You showed them wild. You showed them all. Remember, a pretty girl is like a melody, but get 3 or 4 tunes playing at once, you can go crazy there. Isn't the old philosopher saying, you show me an antique stringed instrument that's been stored in the attic, and I'll show you a dirty liar.
Rock Archives, a visit to the time vaults of rock and roll. Today, whatever happened to Alvin and the Chipmunks?
Rock Archives, brought to you by Dr. Schill's family of impersonal hygiene products and your neighborhood snack shack, where quality never gets in the way of quantity.
The time is the early 60s,
Elvis is still in the army, the Beatles are still in the basement, but kids are still dancing. And it's vocal groups who own the airwaves. Groups like the Beach Boys and the Four Seasons are topping the charts with their tight harmonies and catchy melodies. But no one has tighter harmonies or is more successful than a trio of rambunctious rodents who go by the moniker Alvin and the Chipmunks. Guided by the Colonel Parker-esque David Seville, they turn their cuddly good looks and cute tunes into solid gold. Hit records, a television show, screaming fans, they had it all. But by the late 60s, with the advent of psychedelia, the Chipmunks seemed to go into hibernation. What happened? We caught up with the one-time leader of the group, Alvin, in his Los Angeles apartment.
Theodore, he was first lead, man. Him, me, we never got along too great, you know? I mean, I liked the dude, but we just had different ideas about where to take the act, you know? So, like, when things started to slip, you know, everybody's playing this freak-out stuff, this real long hair thing. We had long hair before anybody, man. But, you know, we kept ourselves neat. Yeah, so, anyway, when things start to go downhill, Theodore cuts out, forms his own group. He was always kind of jealous of me, man, you know, because like I was the front man and I got all the attention, you know. So, he goes into country and western. Had a couple of minor hits, but nothing too much ever happened to him, career-wise.
Got a pouch full of love in a tree up above. Oh, I'm losing my mind over you.
Pouch Full of Love reached number 24 on the country charts in May of 1970. It was Theodore's biggest hit. After fading from the charts, Theodore decided to go behind the scenes. He moved to Nashville and became an agent, representing, among others, Minnie Pearl's Cat, Buck Owens' Horse, and Junior Samples. We spoke with Theodore over the phone.
Hello?
Theodore Chipmunk? This is Rock Archives calling.
What are you all doing?
That's what we wanted to ask you.
Oh, I'm just fine.
Theodore, the question we have to ask is this. Will the Chipmunks ever get back together again?
Oh, shucks. I don't reckon so.
We'll be right back with more Rock Archives after this message.
The least frightening film you could ever hope to see. Beware. It's not alive.
It's not?
No, look, it's not even moving.
Billy, get away from that!
But Mom, it's not alive.
Well, stop kicking it then.
It's not alive.
Well, let's get out of here.
Anything can stop it. This creature is easily believable. Terror well within the grasp of even the most limited imagination. It's not alive. See it alone. It's okay.
It's not alive. Now showing at the Industrial Drive-In. Matinees only.
Rock Archives continues with Alvin and the Chipmunks. We asked Alvin about the third member of the group, Simon, the quiet one.
Yeah. Simon.
Bye, Alvin. Huh? See you later.
Oh, what it is. Yeah, later, man. Oh, all right, Simon. Well, Simon had a real tough personal crisis, man. I don't think I should go into it, but what happened is he got real religious afterwards. Said he couldn't continue in show business. Had to dedicate himself to the Lord. What can you say? He split. I haven't seen him since.
And neither has anyone else. But perhaps the saddest tale belongs to their manager and guardian, David Seville. For when things seemed to be at their worst, Seville was caught in a motel room with an underage woodchuck. The ensuing trial and publicity ruined him. He took his life in February. 1971.
That was hard, man. Real hard. David was like a father to me. To all of us. And after that, it just didn't seem to matter.
Alvin hit the skids. He became heavily involved in drugs and alcohol. He stopped recording. There were no more tours, and the only work he could find was in a small lounge in Las Vegas, opening for the Archies.
I was pretty hard into drugs. I was, but I'm clean now, man. I've got it together. Spent some time in the institution, but I'm back now, and I'm ready.
So, what's gonna happen? What's gonna happen to Alvin the Chipmunk?
Well, I got a new recording contract, and, I'm pretty excited about that. I'm gonna make an album with Joe Cocker and Greg Allman. Should be hot. It's called,
Alvin, are you all right? Alvin?
Huh? Oh, I'm okay, man. I'm okay.
And now you know what happened to Alvin and the Chipmunks. Be with us next time as Rock Archives looks at Aqualung, My Friend.
Rock Archives has been brought to you by Dr. Shell's products and your friendly neighborhood snack shack, which reminds you to eat something today.
Oh, boy. How you doing, Alan?
Yeah, it's kind of rough, man. Kind of rough. Yeah. I'm telling you.
I tell you, it's getting late. But I really like getting down, you know? I mean, I like getting down late.
It's out of sight, man.
Yeah.
But I'd like to hit the sack late as it is.
You're not feeling good, huh?
Rotten, man. Rotten. I'm so down today, Albert.
You're down, huh? Oh, what a pity.
Oh, I don't know what to do.
Hey, maybe I can help, Albert. I've got this great joke about these three scientists, an Englishman, a German, and a Jew. Big, big yucks here. It's a real pick-me-up.
I don't want to hear no jokes.
You don't want to hear any jokes, huh?
It might distort my point of view.
No, it's not that kind of a joke. Now look, there were these three scientists, and they were all working on this top-secret radiation project. Real hush-hush stuff. Shh.
Please don't make me laugh, Albert. Because my career's based on feeling blue.
Okay, Albert. Now, this doctor comes to these three scientists one day and he says, "Gentlemen, I've got some bad news for you."
Speaking of doctors.
Yeah.
You know, I saw one yesterday and he said, "I'm going to die."
Well, that's what this joke's all about. How three different kinds of people react to bad news from a doctor. Now, in this case, the scientists have been exposed to too much radiation.
Oh, he says, ain't nothing gonna save me this time.
I mean, radiation can kill you. It's like eating a TV set.
You know, it ain't even worth a try.
Well, you know, that is quite a coincidence, because that is exactly what this doctor told our three scientist friends. Hey, maybe you all go to the same doctor, huh? No, I'm just kidding. I know you don't.
You ain't taking this serious enough, Albert.
Well,
maybe you're right, Albert. Here, I'll try and shape up. There we go. How's that?
But frankly, neither am I.
You're not? Fine. Now, back to the joke. The doctor said to these three scientists, "Gentlemen, since you worked so hard on this project, you can have one last wish, anything you want, on us." All right, you know what the Englishman said? I love this.
I don't care about no Englishman.
He doesn't care about any Englishman. Would you listen to this blues great?
I got enough problems right here.
Al, stop being such a gloomy gus. Now, the Englishman said, "All right, if I have one last wish, send me home so I may spend my last days looking over the white cliffs of Dover." Great, huh?
No, I can't see no white cliffs, Albert.
Well, you don't really have to see them, Albert. I mean, it's just scene setting. It's just exteriors. I mean, it's not...
Now, these days, I ain't seeing nothing too clear.
You want my advice? Contact lenses. Okay. Now, the doctor asked the German scientist what his last wish was, and he said, "Ben, I'd like to spend the last days in the great beer halls of Munich getting drunk and listening to music."
I would say getting drunk and digging music sounds like a mighty, 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 mighty good idea.
Well, that's better. Now we're beginning to see some smiles. Okay, so the Jewish scientist was the only one left, and the doctor asked him what his last wish was, okay?
I can feel the punchline coming. Oh, I can feel it. I can feel it coming soon.
All right, now remember now, the doctor said that each of these scientists had only one wish because they were going to die. I don't know if I mentioned that earlier, but it's very important, the joke. If you don't know it, you might not understand.
Yes! Tell me what the Jewish fellow said.
Okay, the Jewish fellow said, well, to tell you the truth, if I got one last...
You know, I'm about to end this too.
Excuse me. The Jewish fellow said, well, to tell you the truth, if I got one last wish, I wish to see another doctor. You heard it. You don't like it?
No, not funny. No, it's real funny, Albert.
Well, you know, I would like to point out that it didn't get any laughs because there's no audience here, and if there was an audience, it would get
I
big laughs.
I know you're a mighty funky buffoon.
Hey, I thank you for the compliment.
Yes, you're welcome, man.
What a gas jamming with
you. It's been a pleasure, man. I'm telling you, you're out of sight. I'm telling you, that's cool.
We're back. Mel Brewer, Insomniac Time, 2 to 6. And it's 3:30 now, which means we've reached the Progressive Trends part of our program, a segment where we talk to people who indicate what the newest trends are in progressive music. And tonight our guest is a man named Ron Fields, who comes to us tonight from London, England. He's a manager, the man who discovered Circle, and he's here tonight to tell us about a new group who he thinks is really going to make it big. Ron? Welcome to the studio. Glad to have you here at BGD.
Thanks, Mel. You're terrific. I love your show. You're fantastic. Wouldn't miss it.
Thanks, Ron. Well, the heck, let's not beat around the bush. Who are they? Tell us about them. We want to know.
I'm very excited about this group, more than I have been for years. I've been traveling around for years trying to sign good groups. This is the one. They're going right to the top. It's a missile. It's a rocket. I'm very excited. I'll tell you about it. Went to the British Isles. Excuse? Vacation. Needed rest. Lo and behold, found a group. Four men, sweaters, blonde hair, singing, like birds. I went out of my nut. I fell on my bum. I couldn't believe it. They were fantastic. Signed them up, said, sing for me. They said, yes, please. They did. They're fantastic.
And what kind of stuff are they going to be doing? Are they rockers? Are they country music? Are they playing the classical rock of...
Excuse me? Wailing songs. The best. That's what they do. They sing wailing songs. No instruments. No guitar. No bass. No drums. No Moog. Nothing. Dumper. In the dumper, those instruments. Flush them down the toilet.
Well, they just sing. They're a cappella, then?
A cappella. A cappella. They're fantastic. Found them in the Shetland Islands. They're terrific. They're the best. Wailing songs are going to be the new trend.
The newest thing. Well, tell us a little bit about them. Maybe.
No more country music. No more classical music. Forgot it. Forgot it. Forgot it. Forgot it. I don't remember what that was. It went out the window. I don't remember that. Hello? Hello? Sorry. No more classical music here at this station. Only wailing music will be fantastic. No more country. No more rock and roll. Thank you.
What about rock opera?
Dumper. In the dumper. Flush it. Flush it.
Well, tell us something about them. I mean, what are their favorite colors, or who are their biggest influences?
Mal, we're not talking colors here. We're talking influences. We're talking two people, two giants, two greats. Nina Simone, Frankie Valli. Stop. Check, please. That's it. That's where they learned what they know. They're fantastic.
And they've terrific. Taken all that Frank and Nina have offered and done something new with this whole wailing thing. Who do you think in particular they're going to appeal to? I mean, is
everybody,
there a certain
everybody, kind of- everybody. A fireman, a neurosurgeon, the guy on the street, the bum on the corner, the cop on the beach, the guy with varicose veins, the guy in traction, anybody. Oh, an old lady with a walker, crying, her husband's left, goodbye, not coming back. I'm talking anybody. I'm talking a choir. I'm talking Gump Worsley. I'm talking dejected. I'm talking rejected. I'm talking no contract next year. $75,000 one year, no money the next. Well, I'm talking anyone who's interested in listening to wailing songs. Wailing songs are the best.
What is the...
I'm talking about a guy in Africa in a gumbo hut. I'm talking about a guy in the bayou. I'm talking about a guy in Florida sanding his nose.
Well, what is the name of the cut that you've got for us here in the studio today?
No name, Mel. We have no name for this. It's a fantastic group. It's fantastic. We don't have to do. No
name,
name and no
for
name
the
for the group.
Either.
No name for the group.
Well, perhaps we could have a contest here at BGT and let
fantastic.
The Insomniacs out there in the audience give a name to this big group. Keep your ears open for that, Insomniacs. We'll be doing that in the next couple of weeks as soon as we get the clearance from upstairs. Sorry, that's how the stations run, Ron. And maybe the Insomniacs can be responsible for something very special in professional music.
Fantastic.
Well, we're going to play the cut right now, and it's going to be a very, very big hit, according to Mr. Ron Field. Ron, thanks for coming by. We'll talk after the record. Let's hear what you think. The telephone number here is 262-4200. Give us a call if you like what you hear.
Out of New Bedford, 21 years on the good ship Columbine.
Hey!
For the sea blows green in the Argentine when the bosun splice the line.
Hey!
Oh, around the horn our whaler tacks with a crew of Bedford men.
Hey!
McGee and me and the first mate's three and dirty Boston men. Oh, it's all hands tug and blow, lads, blow, when you hunt for the horrible sperm. Oh, it's up me mates as the lookout shouts and the topsail mizzen fast.
Hey!
And the capstan spins on the fo'c'sle poop and we've sighted whale at last.
Hey!
Then it's breach our boats in the ocean wave while the oarlocks whistle and boom.
Hey!
And Indian Joe in the spit of the bow lets fly with his lampoon.
Oh, it's all hands tug and blow, lads, blow, when you hunt for the horrible sperm.
Then the whale, she dives like a devil into hell, and away goes the singing line.
Hey!
And Boston Ben took a flounder of the flukes, and he drowned in the salty brine.
Ray, hey, lad!
And he drowned in the salty brine.
Ray!
Now there's one less whale fish in the sea, and the good ship safe and sound.
Hey!
And the oil's on to boil in the belly of the hold, and we're bound for Bedford town.
Hey!
Oh, it's all hands tug and blow, lads, blow, when you hunt for the horrible sperm.
Wow, our phone board is just lit up like a Christmas tree, and it seems that everybody out there is really digging your new group, Moran. Congratulations.
Fantastic. Mel, it's always a pleasure to be on your show. You're terrific. You're the best there is.
Well, thank you very much. Insomniacs, let's all get together and give Ron a great big goodbye and a great big thank you for stopping by to Progressive Trends. Thanks, Ron.
Fantastic, Mel. Listen, before I go, I have a little gift for you, a little envelope here.
Oh, thank you.
If you'd be so kind as to open it after I leave the studio. Just a little snowstorm in July, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
Yes. Well, thank you, Ron. I got to get out of the way right now, for those nutty, wacky guys from the National Lampoon are going to be in some pretty crazy things to everybody's head. So tune in tomorrow night, Insomniac Time, 2 to 6. This is Mel Brewer. I'll see you then, if you're still awake.
And now, grit your teeth and clench your fists. It's time for the adventures of Nick Danger. Third Eye.
This is Nick Danger speaking, and here's a tough little story I like to call Lucky Liability. You see, it all started when I got a call from Lieutenant Alvin Bradshaw down at Fun Fun Town Police Headquarters.
Hey, Nicky, I got a little problem here.
Problem, Al? What, too little authority? Not enough people to boss around? Not enough laws to enforce?
Well, yeah, but this is even worse. The Fried Food and Drug Administration has called a town-wide alert. People are as fat as can be. But the courtroom is empty. Nobody's suing anyone over this.
Oh, hey, that's not my fault.
It's got to be somebody's fault. And in my world, that means it's your fault.
I took a walk down to the biggest and fastest fat food joint in town, Rocky's Dreaded Popcorn Shrimp.
Please, take as much as you want. Now my plan is complete. I've loaded up all the burgers and flies with ultra-pretty polyunsaturated fat, and I've convinced the people of Fun Fun Town that they have free will, so I'm not responsible for what they eat. They are the fools! Obese people with no desire to sue me!
I could see this would be a big problem. If you can sue a ladder maker because you fall off his ladder, if you can sue a paper bag company because you suffocate yourself with the bag... I see, life is good. If people begin to think they're responsible for their own eating habits, though, society will crumble. What would be next?
What's next, Nick, is that this episode is all too quickly coming to an end.
Hey.
In fact, I'm not seeing that it was much of an episode to begin
well,
with.
Well, not everything's that simple, Dwight. Sometimes a detective gotta take what's given to him.
Here you go.
Oh, and look, Rocky just gave me a double order of his dreaded popcorn shrimp.
You've been overstuffed with the adventures of Nick Danger, Third Eye.
What good is the Third Eye?
It holds his head up.
All right. Hey, feel free to sing along. Oh, that sounds good. Good. Keep it up. Don't stop. For anything. For anybody. Ever. All right. That's good. You can stop now. All right, KBC here with you with a bit slap, Comedy Day, all that stuff. You already know all that stuff, so we'll just skip it. We started that set off with Mr. Eddie Lawrence. The DJ's philosopher returns. Eddie is still alive. He's still with us, and he's probably still writing new philosopher routines. He's probably got about 4,075,000 at last count. And just keeps going and going and going like the proverbial energy bunny, energized. I can't say that. The energy bunny, okay? You know which bunny I mean. The pink one with the drum, right? After that, Travesty Limited. A couple of wackos from the Baltimore area. No longer together, of course. That was Rock Archives, Whatever Happened to the Chipmunks? In case you ever really, really seriously wanted to know, now you do know. After that, the Alberts, Albert King and Albert Brooks. That was the Don't Make Me Laugh Blues. Did you know that Albert Brooks' brother is Dave Osborne, commonly called Super Dave, who shows up all the time on Curb Your Enthusiasm? A little tidbit for you. After that, the National Lampoon Radio Hour, Ron Fields' Wailing Songs, Late Night with Ron Fields, and that was Bill Murray and Christopher Guest. I think it was Christopher Guest, but of course, Bill Murray is pretty unique. And then Nick Janger in Lucky Liability from the Firesign Theater from not too long ago, like 2008, 2007 or 6, something like that. And we'll be hearing from them in a minute with something vintage. So, like I said, feel free to laugh your ass off, even if you're in the subway or in a meeting somewhere. And if you're in a meeting somewhere, what are you doing listening to your Walkman or your iPod or whatever you got? Die cracky indeed. So I'll be back in a little while. Carry on.
Bob Hind here, and today we have another amazing voyage on the Golden Hind. Hello, I'm Bob Hind. You know, hindsight is golden. Last week, when Heinz and Golda Klutschifter took us back 1,000 years to old Guadalajara, it was a journey which proved that the Aztecs invented the vacation. So, when you're planning your next vacation, get behind the Bob Hind overnight speed tour. Fly by night and sleep all day in the hot Chocolatl Springs. You know, Sundays was invented down there, making it the vacationer's paradise. Well, here's a pair of familiar adventurers. Let's say hello to Buzz and Bunny Kromhunger.
Hello.
Buzz, how is your lovely boy, Buddy?
Oh, he's in medical school for a few weeks in Mexico, Bob.
And let's see what films you have brought back of your latest castaway cruise.
Well, Bob, here we are on the screen now, serene and a little bit out of touch with reality as we wave the final goodbyes and cast away from the singles dock there at lovely Rancho Malario Clowndominiums.
Goodbye.
And head down the runny old Chili Colorado River.
Look at that moss.
Oh, it's so thick and blue and soft like a tongue.
Who are these people?
Oh, these are the Mosses.
She's ultra attractive.
Certainly.
And he's the very sharp, tall Jewish gentleman. There he is.
Uh-huh. And these are the Rappers.
Oh, they look rough.
Oh, they are. Bunny and Sunny Rapid.
They're grand.
Well, we're back on the river now, and pretty soon you'll be seeing the dangerous part.
There it is.
That's it.
Certainly appeared dangerous. Oh, what are these off in the desert?
These are the buttes.
Those humps? Those are the mounds, Paul and Patty.
Oh, she's ultra attractive.
Oh, that blood-red hair and white skin made her the envy of all the German missionaries around.
I see what you mean. Now, what are these?
Well, these are the aliens we told you about.
Yeah, the sandbar coming up is one of their typical landing sites, Bob.
You see that dehydrated horse?
Yeah, they do that.
And they love moss.
Oh, here, he wants me to eat some of it.
He thinks that we eat moss.
I'm pretending to eat it now, see with my hands, to make him happy.
That's very nice.
It tastes awful, Bob.
Well, that's too bad.
Oh, look here. We're trying to give the guy some milk, but he doesn't seem to know what it is.
But they sure know where it comes from.
Uh-oh. Look at it. They're coming towards us
now. They're coming towards you now.
Oh. Here we are, waking up in the spaceship.
Yeah, I don't know who took these pictures, Buzz.
See, we don't really remember too much of this part.
It's kind of strange in here with the floating.
Yeah, like a dream.
That looks like a pair of women's shoes.
I see washing you down here.
Oh, here we are now, Bob. Out of the spaceship, down healthy in the alien village. And this is actually in our own state of Arizona. They've been living like Indians there peacefully since 1949.
And most of them have never seen a human being.
Well, some of the young ones go to the movies and hooker, and that old man there says he's been to Chicago. Oh.
There he is. You can tell. See, he's saluting us.
Yes. What is this frenzied dance, Bunny?
Well, Bob, they do that to make themselves dizzy and work up big appetite.
The alien government staged these dances for us.
Who's that playing the piano?
That's the chief.
Well, they all play the piano just beautifully, too.
What are they doing now, Buzzy?
Well, actually, they're symbolically asking me to dance.
And here, symbolically, that old chief is stripping her clothes off.
Well, you're really dancing up a storm, Buzzy.
And here it comes.
Oh. And they insisted now, see, that Bunny join in.
Slipping.
See, I'm dancing there, and the liquid rain is soaking into my body like little tongues.
Yes, is this beating and clubbing a part of the dance? Yeah.
Well, yes and no, Bob.
I don't remember. They got me right away.
And here they are, bringing all of us back to life.
Oh, we're good as new, and as you can see, we've been fully accepted into the alien community.
Well, that is very, very interesting.
Well,
so actually you are both aliens right now.
Sure, yes, we were changed forever by that strange ritual from so far away.
And yet, so near, Bob. Yes.
Well, thank you, Buddy and Buddy Crumbhunger.
Thank you.
And say hello to your boy, Buzz.
No.
I didn't know he was old enough to be in medical school.
Buddy.
They just run the credits. Just keep talking. They run the credits over.
Oh,
this
is that
part.
It? That's
our microphones are not on.
Never been to the Piss Fest, Bob.
Balham, gateway to the south. We enter Balham through the verdant grasslands of Battersea Park, and at once we are aware that here is a land of happy, contented people who go about their daily tasks in truly democratic spirit. This is busy High Street, focal point of the town's activity. Note the quaint old stores whose frontage is covered with hand-painted inscriptions. Every one a rare example of native Balham art. Let us read some of them as our camera travels past.
Cooking apples, choice eaters.
A song to remember at the Tandemount Cinema.
A suit to remember at Montague Moth.
Promotions conducted with decorum and taste.
Friday night, bring your own paper. Rally Thursday, Berkeley Square. Viscountess Lewisham and Mrs. Gerald Legg. Up the ruling classes.
This shows the manifold activities of Balham's thriving community. But in quiet corners, we still find examples of the exquisite workmanship that Balham craftsmen have made world famous. Toothbrush holesmanship.
On my forge, I carve the little holes in the top of toothbrushes. It is exciting work, and my forefathers have been engaged upon it since 1957. The little holes in the top are put in manually, or in other words, once a year. I recently had the honor of demonstrating my craft before the owner of Ice. He stopped by one day for a couple of words. I did not understand either of them.
So much for Balham's industries. Now let us see a little more of the town. Here is the great park covering nearly half an acre. This is where the children traditionally meet by the limpid waters of the old drinking fountain, a drinking fountain that has for countless years across the vast aeons of time given untold pleasure to man, woman, and child. Beside this fountain, donated by able counselor Quills as long ago as 1928, the little ones sit around a trim nursemaid and listen spellbound and enchanted as she reads them a story.
With one bound, he was by her side. Nora felt his hot breath on her cheek as he ripped the thin silk from...
We are now entering Old Balham. Time has passed by this remote corner. So shall we. But Balham is not neglecting the cultural side. This is Eugene Quills, whose weekly recitals are attended by a vast concord of people. He has never had a lesson in his life. Such is the enthusiasm of Balham's music lovers that they are subscribing to a fund to send Eugene to Italy or Vienna or... anywhere. Night falls on Balham. From Quill's Folly, Balham's famous beauty spot, which stands nearly 10 feet above sea level, The town is spread below us in a fairyland of glittering lights, changing all the time. Green, amber, red, red and amber, and back to green. The nightlife is awakening. The El Morocco Tea Room.
Hi, miss.
Yes, what do you want?
Pilchards.
They're off, dear.
Baked beans?
Off.
Oh, meatloaf salad?
That's off, too.
Pot of tea?
No tea, dear.
Or just milk, then?
Milk's off.
Roll and butter, then?
No butter, dear.
Oh, just a roll.
Only bread, love.
I might have just as well have stayed at home.
Well, I don't know. It does you good to have a fling occasionally.
And so the long night draws on. The last stragglers make their way home, and the lights go out one by one as dawn approaches and the bell of St. Quill's Parish Church tolls 10 o'clock. Balham sleeps. And so we say farewell to this historic borough with many pleasant memories and the words of C. Quill Smith, Balham's own bard, burning in our ears.
Broad-bosomed, bold, becalmed, benign, lies Balham, four square on the northern line. Matched by no marvel save in eastern scene, a rose-red city, half as gold as green. By country churchyard, ferny fen and mere, what quills mute, inglorious, lies buried here? Oh, stands the church clock at 10 to 3, and is there honey still for tea?
Honey's off, dear.
You're from Five Points.
I'm from Five Points.
That's right near Kearsarge, isn't it?
Well, we're Arthur Hyback's whole family lives.
Is that right?
Arthur was the guy that went to school with me in the fifth grade. He used to stab deers and chew tobacco and dream. Mostly dream.
Is that what he did for a living?
No. I don't believe he's still living.
Oh, is that right?
He was from there.
Oh, he was from Five Points.
He was from Five Points. We went to school together.
Uh-huh.
And
that grade school?
Yes, I'll never forget our sixth grade teacher. Eloise Emmerly was her name.
Eloise Emmerly.
She is always pregnant.
I don't suppose you could forget a teacher like that. What did she teach?
Well, she taught the milkman where it was. Yeah. Yes, sir. The teacher said one day, she said, Arthur, he's like that. And she cut him completely in one of his daydreams. And she said, Arthur, who discovered America?
Right, yeah.
I whispered in his ear, Joe DiMaggio.
What did Arthur say?
He said, Joe DiMaggio.
Joe DiMaggio, yeah.
The teacher gave him an A.
Is that right?
She is pregnant. She is having morning sickness. She didn't know. Yeah, she just gave him an A and let it go right on.
Is that right? Yeah. You say you come from Five Points, huh?
I do. I could prove it.
Could you prove it?
Darn right.
Oh, I see.
It's a tattoo. It says right there. It says
five points right on your stomach.
Yeah, God, I was drunk. You almost put 4 points. But I told him, you misspell it, and I hope my uncle whipped you.
Let me ask this. This is kind of a stupid question, I know, but why would you have 5 points tattooed on your belly like that?
I have no idea. I was just wandering in a field one day. I was looking at marmots.
You were looking, wait a minute.
Yeah.
At what?
Marmots.
Marmots?
Yeah. They'll hypnotize you.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What's a marmot?
I don't know. I just looked at them. I didn't study their case history. They're about this high.
Uh-huh.
If you get them trapped in a cave and their eyes go red, leave them trapped.
Is that right?
Yeah. George Herman went in after one once.
George didn't, did he?
Yes, he did.
Well, he was always weird, wasn't he?
Well, no. Well, George was... He was an orphan living right in his own house. Do you understand?
I understand. I don't believe it, but I understand it.
I didn't either. We were supposed to have a softball game on Good Friday.
Is that right?
And I was at George's house.
Well, how did
there was nobody. I never saw his mother, I never saw his father, but there was always an oil drilling machine in the front yard. And George looked at me and he said, "Thou, for art thou?"
He said that, did he?
And I said, I'm not messing with you, George. If you can put on heavy stuff like that, listen. By God, we said our prayers, had two fried eggs, a mashed potato, and went down and lost the ball game the next day.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You played a lot of ball, did you?
Very little that day.
Yeah.
Because George had some cider in his barn.
Oh, is that right?
Forgot to, yeah, we
some
got
hard it. Cider, huh?
Well, it was hard to not whiz at it. Yeah.
Did
they
he
told me that 14 years before when they made it, it was just softer than down.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah. Yeah. You pour were 5 quarts of that, and I was starting to get dizzy.
you were drinking when you were 12 years old?
Well, so was George.
Did you smoke behind the barn?
No, we didn't. George had a hypodermic needle full of elderberry wine.
A hypo full of elderberry wine?
Yes, he put it in the main vein underneath my kneecap. That's what caused me to be thrown out the next day trying to steal second. I turned purple and I never forget it. I said, out. I said, thank God. I had a bet on the game.
Yeah, yeah. Did you win the bet?
Yeah, we
and
lost,
you lost the game. Yeah.
Darn right. Yeah, I wasn't no fool, you know.
I guess not.
We came from hard times.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, are you kidding
Pretty
me?
Pretty poor, huh?
Things were really, really hard
really
when
hard.
I was a kid.
Is that right?
Yes, sir. Next to me, Ted Quillen would really be the star of the class.
Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, he wore his sister's shoes to school, but by God, he had shoes.
Yeah. Yeah. Things were pretty tough. Why was that? Because your dad didn't have a job, or the farm was bad, or what was it?
No, my dad was on vacation.
Oh, he
went
extended
when I was two.
Yeah.
Yeah, he went into Canada.
Is that right?
Marmot hunting. I don't know why my dad went. Our place is overrun with them.
Yeah, so you just take after your dad, in other words.
No, my mother did. Yeah, she was never around either.
Was she?
No. When I was 14, I was meaner than 700 hells.
Is that right?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, but what made you mellow down?
I went to a school, girls' school.
Yeah, you went to a girls' school?
Yes. I mellowed right out.
I bet you did.
Yeah.
How did you arrange to go to a girls' school anyway?
Well, Ted Quillen lent me a sister's shoes.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, shaved my legs and went right on in there.
You did, huh?
Yeah. They needed a second baseman anyway.
On the girls' softball
team. Yeah, right.
Well, you're not so dumb.
Oh, no, I ain't crazy, you know.
No. Well, how long were you at the all-girls school?
7 days.
It's just 7 days.
And 7 nights. Huh? I didn't get my sheepskin, but I dipped under a few. Can you dig it?
I can dig it, yeah.
You talk that way, too?
Yeah, yeah. Well, now that you're in the city, what do you plan to do when you're here in the city? You're
looking
I'm going
to commit suicide tomorrow. Yeah, I've lived a full life.
Yeah, have you?
Yeah. Last night I sent a check to Father Junipero Serro.
Is that?
Yes.
Was he the priest in your hometown?
No, I just had a vision about him one night.
Oh, you did?
I was injecting some more of that elderberry stuff.
Under the kneecaps.
Yeah, and I saw this giant man with a halo around his head wearing a motorcycle jacket talking Spanish.
Is that right?
And I said, by God, I'm going to give everything I got to him.
And so you're going to send all the stuff to him, and then you're just going to end it all, huh?
Well, no, I'm going to start off by sending 10% of it.
Why just 10%?
Well, I want to see if the mailman's crooked. Yeah, I want to see if he'll take it on up there.
Oh, look, well, it's been fantastic having you.
It's been a drag to me.
Has it?
Yeah. Well, you just stand there and look dumb. Yeah.
That's all I've been doing for the past 15 minutes. I've been having a ball.
Well, I'll tell you what.
What?
Eloise Zimmerly is out of her condition.
Oh, she is.
And rolling in the sidewalk.
She's ready, huh?
Yeah. Ready. Want to meet her?
Why not?
By God. Good night, everybody.
Let's go.
Hello, doctor.
Oh, hello. How you doing?
Yeah, is this the acupuncture clinic?
Oh, yeah. I'm a Dr. Long Wong.
Oh,
Dr.
Yeah.
Wong, acupuncture clinic.
Yeah, well, I have this headache, doctor, and I just can't get rid of it, man. I've tried everything. I tried the hypnosis and yoga. I stood on my head, and I tried Quaaludes and Coke, and nothing will get rid of it, man.
Oh.
I'm a nervous wreck. I haven't slept for 3 days, and I'm really in a lot of pain. Could you help me?
You have a headache.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
A headache, a pain in the head.
Mm-hmm.
When the people talk loud around you,
they
hurt
loud.
A head.
Oh, yeah.
And when the noise of people every day come by and say hello, everything you heard in the head.
Yeah, uh-huh.
It make a headache.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you come to the right place because acupuncture can cure everything.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Acupuncture in China They cure everything.
Yeah.
In China, a pregnant lady, come and we give acupuncture and they have a baby with no pain.
Oh, yeah.
No pain.
Great.
Next day, they're in the field, they work in the field. Acupuncture can fix a headache, fix backache, fix anything.
Just a headache. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Now, you have acupuncture before.
No, never did.
You no have acupuncture before.
Oh, no. Uh-huh.
Well, that's why you have headache. If you have acupuncture before, you have no headache. No headache. Acupuncture. Okay. Get up on the table here.
Okay.
Up on the table.
Okay.
Now, you never have this before.
No.
Okay, we better stop you in the first time.
What?
Well, just so you won't make a wrong move and kill yourself.
What?
Just a little joke. No, I don't want you to interfere with my hand when I move a needle. You might, don't make a mess.
Yeah, okay.
You understand?
Whatever you say.
Okay, now stop in the arm. I stop in your arm. Now maybe you better take off your shoes.
Huh? Okay.
No, just a minute. No, you leave a shoe on. Phew.
God.
My goodness.
If you could just help me, I haven't slept in over a week.
Smell like you haven't washed for over a week. Okay. Anyway, no matter. Oh. We stop with your leg down.
Yeah,
we stop with your arm down.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, you see, I'll do you one. No, nothing to be scared. No frightening. I show you the needle.
Okay.
See the needle?
God, that's a long needle.
Well, it has to be long. It goes through your skull and into the spine, you see.
What?
No, I just joke. Just a little joke to relieve a tension.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of tension with a headache.
A lot of tension,
Doc. Okay. Now, I take the needle. Now, when I put a needle, you watch, I put a needle with no nerve so you don't feel no pain. You see, I'm going to put the needle right there, and I turn it with my finger, and you don't feel nothing. It don't hurt. You don't feel nothing, do you?
It hurts.
Okay. Now, we have another needle. I want to stick over here. No nerve. You don't feel nothing.
Wait. Oh, that hurts.
There we go.
Soon, wait a minute.
You feel really good.
Don't twist it, man. That hurts.
Really good.
That hurts. Go.
Now we have another needle.
Another one.
Now, you heard a yin yang.
Yeah.
Yin yang?
Uh-huh.
Okay, this needle, we're going to stick in your yin yang.
What?
There
we'll take it out.
That's the best part.
Take it out. That hurts.
There we go. Now, I want you to watch closely, because when you got needles sticking in like this here, listen, you can play a tune. Ding, bing, ding, ding, ding. Is that how you make a Chinese music?
Take them out.
How you want to pay?
What?
It costs $150 for first treatment.
I don't have $150.
You don't have $150.
No, take them out. Please take them out.
I can't take them out with no money. You see, they go in free, but I cost some money to take out.
Please take them out.
I know. I have one more needle.
No.
One more. This will help you pay.
No.
This one go underneath your fingernail.
Very effective in Japan. I'll pay. Get my wallet. Got a match charge.
Okay.
Take him out.
There we go. Okay. Where's your wallet? Okay, I got a. You take a match. We take a master charge.
Sure.
Is that your family?
Take him out.
Cute kid.
Archie, what is this I hear about Duffy having a two-headed baseball player?
Yep, Took Top Gruskin, a pitcher. What about it?
A two-headed pitcher?
You seem incredible. But you see, we got this ball club down at Duffy's Tavern, the D-A-A-I-Y.
The D-A-A-I-Y?
Yeah, Duffy's All-American Irish Yankees. So one day, Duffy, who's the manager of the club, says to Dugan, a shortstop, he says, Dugan, we got a great ball club here, but I'm afraid it lacks color. What's the answer? So Dugan says, color, huh? Well, this may not be it, Duffy, but I think I know where I can lay my hands on a pitcher with two heads. So Duffy says, pitcher with two heads, huh? I don't know, Dugan, you think it'd be a novelty? So Dugan says, well, what if it ain't? You can't pass up a guy that can watch first base and third base at the same time. So Duffy says, yeah, might be an angle. Besides, the guy will be great for double headers. So he says, where's he from, Dugan? So Dugan says, he's from Walla Walla, naturally.
Archie, now just a second. Do you mean to tell me you've actually seen this two-headed chap yourself?
You doubt my vivacity? Of course I've seen him. I remember the night he walked into the tavern the first time, right after he got out of the army.
He was in the army?
Yeah.
Didn't he have a little trouble getting into the army?
Well, he was a little too short. But they finally took him in. You see, the army doctor examined him and took the medical report into the colonel. So, funny thing is, the colonel looks at the report and he says, let me see here. Two top Gruskin. Eyes, black and blue. Hair, blonde and brunette. Teeth, all and none. Mustache, yes and no. So the colonel says, this guy sounds like he's got two heads. So the doctor says, yeah. So the colonel says, oh. So they took him in.
But Archie, weren't the two heads a handicap in the army?
Well, saluting was a bit of a problem. But the main trouble was that the one head couldn't get no sleep. They made the other head the bugler.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, as I said, I remember the first time he walks into the tavern all dressed up formal in a tuxedo by this time to sign his contract. So everybody in the joint stares at him in amazement. So two top times to the crowd, he says, what are you staring at? None of you guys ever see a tuxedo before? Well, Duffy's the diplomat, see, so he quick covers the embarrassment. He says, wait, to bring a couple of beers for this gentleman. So then he says, stick around, two-top. There's a masquerade going on here tonight. Maybe he'll win a prize. Funny thing, the guy did. Won first prize. Came as a pair of bookends. With this little book between his two heads, a book his mother gave him called My Son, My Son. Well, anyway, Duffy says, look, two-top, I'm a man of few words. Report tomorrow morning as a uniform and two caps waiting for you in the locker room.
Archie, how did this two-top get along with the rest of the ballplayers?
Not as well as you'd naturally expect. You see, we got this catcher, Gorilla Hogan, a natural-born catcher. Stands 6 feet, 14 inches high, and he squats standing up.
Well, he sounds like a monstrosity.
Yeah, swell fella. Anyways, the trouble starts right off in the first game. You see, the gorilla signals for a fast curve, so the two-headed guy nods one head yes and shakes the other head no. Well, this is very confusing to the gorilla. Ain't a very bright guy anyway, even for a gorilla. So he throws down his glove and he goes over and he squawks to Duffy. So Duffy says, now don't get excited, gorilla. Go out there and talk it over with the guy. After all, three heads is better than one. But the gorilla says, nope, Duffy, it's no use. I just got a feeling that the guy ain't quite normal. Besides, I don't trust him. You notice the way he's always got them two heads together? First thing you know, you're gonna have a strike on your hand. No, Duffy, one of us will have to go, and don't forget who owns the baseball.
Arch, what finally happened?
Well, Duffy naturally had to fire two-top. And it was kind of sad, you know, the way the lumps came up in his throat. Duffy told him he had to go, but I guess he got over it. The last I heard of him, he was back at his old job watching tennis matches for Pat Day News.
All right, that does it. That's it. I've had it. You've had it. Let's just go back to sleep and forget the whole thing ever happened. We started that set with the Firesign Theater from Everything You Know Is Wrong. That was The Voyage of the Golden Hind. Following that, Peter Sellers and Balham, Gateway to the South. Hudson and Landry, after that, a couple of LA DJs turned comedy team. That was 5 points. You have them 5 points. Cheech and Chong, Acupuncture, and Ed Archie Gardner from Archie's Tavern. And that was, of course, the sad tale of Two Top Gruskin. I should say the punny story of Two Top Gruskin. Okay, so that does it for this. We'll do this again. We'll have more comedy stuff. I'm just starting to digitize my comedy stuff. I've got everything on cassettes because, you know, that's all we had back in the 80s and the early days. So little by little, I'm getting it over, and I've been working on some of that. So I'll try to bring more of that to you. In the meantime, here comes your mystery track. But first, we're going to have a word from our sponsors. So to you, all of you, I say good day, and I'll talk to you later. Yay, Saints!
Ladies and gentlemen, the president of Old Frothing Slosh.
Thank you, son. It has come to my attention that people are buying Old Frothing Slosh beer just to serve at parties to read the 6 new different labels to each other, laugh, and have a good time. To those people, I say go ahead. Get Old Frothing Slosh by the case or sick pack wherever you buy beer and snicker. Chuckle at the funny labels on the no-deposit, no-return bottles. But remember, Old Frothing Slosh is also a great beer for people without a sense of humor. Besides, how would you like to be a president and have everybody laugh at your product?
I'm talking tonight to Sir Arthur Greaves Striebling.
Oh, no, you're not.
I'm what?
You're not at all. You're talking to Sir Arthur Strieb Greaveling.
Oh,
you're confusing me with Sir Arthur Greaves Striebling.
I'm so sorry.
Yes, well, my name is Strieb Greaveling. The T is silent, as in fox.
I'm so sorry. I would like to ask Sir Arthur something about his rather unique restaurant, the Frog and Peach.
Well, this seems like an ideal opportunity, really. What with me being here and you being there.
Well, yes, yes.
Wonderful opportunity.
Yes, indeed.
Seize it.
Certainly will. Well, perhaps you would tell us something about the Frog and Peach, Sir Arthur.
Yes.
How, in fact, did the idea come to you?
The idea for the Frog and Peach came to me in the bath. A lot of things come to me in the bath. Many mosquitoes, various forms of water snake. But on this occasion, a rather unique and stunning idea. I suddenly thought to myself, where can a young couple with not too much money to spend, you know, feeling a bit hungry, a bit peckish, want something to eat, where can they go and get a really big frog? A really big frog and a damn fine peach. Where can they go?
Yes.
Where can they go? Of course, answer came there none. So on this premise, I founded the restaurant.
On these premises, in fact?
On these precise premises, yes. I founded the Frog and Peach.
How long ago did you start this venture?
Oh, that's a tricky one. Certainly within living memory.
Good.
Believe it or shortly after World War II.
Ah, yes.
You remember that, World War II?
Well, certainly, yes.
Absolutely ghastly business.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely ghastly business.
Yes, indeed, yes.
I was completely against it.
Well, I think we all were.
Yes, well, I wrote a letter.
Getting back to the Frog and Peach.
Yes.
How has business been?
Let me answer that question in two parts. Business hasn't been, and there hasn't been any business. These last 35 years have been rather a lean time for us, up at the old F&P.
Well, don't you feel you're at a slight disadvantage being stuck out here in the middle of a bog and in the heart of the Yorkshire Moors?
I think the word disadvantage is awfully well chosen here, yes. This is what we're at. We're at a disadvantage. Mm. Stuck out here in the middle of a bog in the heart of the Yorkshire Moors. But I thought at the time, rightly or wrongly, possibly both, the people in this country were crying out for a restaurant without a parking problem. And here in the middle of a bog in the heart of the Yorkshire Moors, there is no problem parking the car.
No.
A little difficulty extricating it, but the parking here is magnificent.
Yes.
It is magnificent parking.
Yes, indeed.
Wonderful parking.
But don't you feel you're also at a disadvantage with regard to your menu?
Oh, yes. Yes, we are at a tremendous disadvantage with regard to the menu.
Mm.
Have you seen it?
Very briefly.
That's the only way to see it. I mean, the choice is so limited. We have such a limited choice. There's only two main dishes to choose from. Now, what are they? Last, I should know this by heart after 35 years. Oh, yes, first of all, there is frog à la pêche. Frog à la pêche is basically a large frog covered in boiling Cointreau with a peach stuck in its mouth. It's one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen. The only alternative to frog à la pêche is even worse. Pêche à la frog. Pêche à la frog. A peach is brought to your table by the waiter. Again, covered in boiling Cointreau.
The waiter?
Very often, yes. Very often the waiter is, alas, covered in boiling Cointreau. But the policy here is to aim the Cointreau at the peach.
Yes.
That's the policy.
Yes.
The peach is then sliced open down the middle to reveal, oh my God, about 300 squiggling black tadpoles. It is the most nauseating sight I have ever seen. It's enough to put you off your food.
Yeah.
Which is a damn good thing, considering what the food is like.
Yeah. Who does the cooking?
My wife. My wife does all the cooking, and luckily she does all the eating as well. She's not a well woman.
She's not a well woman?
She is not a well woman, no. And she very much resents having to go down the well every morning. To feed the frogs. She dislikes it intensely. We have to lower her, screaming on a rope. Holy Christ, she goes. Frogs don't like it either.
No.
Dreadful.
Well, this is fascinating stuff. But if you don't mind me saying, sir, it does seem to me as if the whole venture of the Frog and Peach has been a little disastrous.
Oh. I don't think I'd use the word disastrous, yeah?
No?
I think catastrophic will be nearer the mark. The whole thing has been a total failure and a huge catastrophe.
But do you feel you've learned from your mistakes?
Oh, certainly. Certainly. I have learned from my mistakes, and I'm sure I could repeat them exactly.
Thank you, Sir Arthur Green's feelings.
Please, Mr. Green. Here's my feelings.